Hello and welcome to episode 13 of Chicago Business Podcast. The purpose of the podcast is to introduce leading executives and learn about how innovation is changing their businesses. I am your host, Drew Sekula, and today we welcome Leo Trippiano, the founder of Mugsy Jeans, an emerging denim retailer headquartered in Chicago that was recently ranked number 69 on Inc.'s list of 5,000 fastest growing private companies released just last month. And I believe number 3 in retail. So congrats on that. Hello, Leo. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Great to have you on. Love to hear what you have going on there at Mugsy Jeans. But first, I had a question for you. I was just checking out your website. Is that Ian Happ you have on the cover there?
That's right. It's our boy Ian.
Nice.
That's a partnership that came up in the last year, and Ian's having a killer season, so we're super pumped to be associated with him.
Yeah, that's worked out for you guys. You definitely picked the right year to make that happen. He's had some stellar play there. So, that's awesome. Well, we'll talk a little bit about influencers and kind of what how you approach that market. It's I know that having looked at your background, it looks like we have some similar history a little bit with Big Four, but then you've taken an about face and moved into fashion. So I'm excited to hear your story on that. So before we get too much further, though, I'd like to go ahead and break in the beverage of the day. I think that you had a selection that hopefully you have there with you. Is that right?
I wish.
Oh, you don't.
Hour though, we're getting close to the time.
yeah, a little early for that, huh? So, okay, well, we didn't quite coordinate exactly the timing on that, so that's okay. But why don't you tell us what it would be?
The drink would be a Sazerac. That's my go-to at the bar.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It just feels good and has like a unique taste to it. It's a cool one.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I had a little bit of that down on a trip to Nashville not too long ago. I was treated to a Sazerac rye. So pretty cool there.
I've been drinking old fashions for years, and then I just wanted something similar but different. And then someone told me about the Sazerac, and it's just has a bit of absinthe in it, so it gives you like a really unique kind of twist on the old fashioned. So it's like in that realm, but different. So definitely recommend if you haven't tried one or if anyone's interested in it out there.
Yeah, cool. Very cool. Sazerac, they're a big company too. I think they own Buffalo Trace, and I think they have a few different brands under their belt. But I know that Sazerac product itself is definitely a good standby for many. So,
yes, sir.
Nice. Well, why don't we go ahead and get into your origin story a little bit? If you could tell us about your background and a little bit about your connection to Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like you said, I started in the real world, got my master's in accountancy, and then went to work for Price Waterhouse, Big Four, did a few years in New York in the financial services industry, and then moved to Chicago and was in the international tax industry. Touched on a lot of cool, weird stuff in both of those areas. And Chicago, because I went to school in Ohio, met my now wife there, and she's from Chicago. So we moved back about 7 years ago, and I've kind of started growing roots. So, yeah.
Nice. So how is that, how did that time in Big Four Public Accounting help prepare you for what you're doing now there with Mugsy Jeans in terms of that, some of that tax experience and that, you know, is it, I would expect from a project manager perspective and that kind of stuff, obviously, it would be helpful for just general business stuff. But are you finding some of those technical skills too also helpful in the with the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, basically my day-to-day is exactly the same as it was at PwC.
Yeah.
Maybe the hours are somehow longer, but yeah, all of it really helped. I mean, honestly, the biggest one was learning Excel. I became such a wizard at Excel that I could make any forecast or any spreadsheet at like the blink of an eye. And that's been really helpful with like forecasting, planning inventory, all that stuff. But then, yeah, just having tax knowledge was helpful from the beginning, because, you know, then I didn't have to pay an accountant to do the books or, you know, submit our tax returns in the early years when, you know, it's like practically single digits in a lot of the line items, you know, probably wouldn't have been worth it or such a headache just to figure it out. But having that experience was major in helping us like get off the ground. So,
right.
Cool. Yeah.
So how did you, what's kind of the origin there in terms of you coming up with the idea for Mugsy Jeans and what gave you the inspiration to make a go of it?
Yeah. So went to school and college and knew I wanted to be a business owner, but just didn't know in what area. And I just got an accounting degree, figured every business could use, I could use that kind of knowledge towards any business. So went into the real world. And like I said, started working for PwC in New York and immediately started thinking of business ideas, brainstorming anything that I could do to get a business off the ground of my own in my spare time, which is pretty limited given New York big 4 hours. But had a whole bunch of other ideas. They fell through, didn't make it very far. And then the jeans came up naturally. Being in New York, you know, I realized I needed to start dressing better, and I was wearing kind of the rags that I had survived college with still. And was like, all right, and then, you know, the fashion capital of the US, and you start dressing better, and started with jeans. And I was surprised that I couldn't find anything that fit better, you know, looked good, that wasn't extremely uncomfortable. It seemed like there was this huge trade-off, like comfort versus style. And at one point I got a hold of my wife's jeggings and was like, all right, if they can have something like this, there's got to be a way we can take a men's denim and, you know, make it similar to this, obviously not quite that, quite a jegging, but add some of that, infuse some of that, you know, amazing softness and stretch into a men's jean and make it something that still feels like a real jean, but also is really comfortable and you look good in. So that was the initial inspiration. It's just totally organic and natural, believe it or not.
That's great. Do you have any background in fashion, or what kind of gave you the, you just had the gumption and you knew you wanted to start a brand, huh?
Yeah, I think you could just say I was really stubborn. Like, I had this idea and I was like, I really think I'm onto something. And despite a lot of people being like, I don't really get it, or this doesn't seem right, I stuck with it. So, you know, maybe being stubborn sometimes helps. But yeah, definitely the gumption and the drive. I had no experience in the industry. It was definitely a little insane to think that I could even tackle something like that, but I just really believed in the problem and the solution I'd come up with in my mind. And we made a lot of crappy jeans early on and made a lot of mistakes. There's luckily none of them were fatal, and we just were able to continue just getting back up on the horse and making a better and better product. And then it probably took me like 5 years to learn everything I needed to know, because I was really starting from scratch and meeting as many people in the industry as I could. And then also on the side, kind of developing our first like prototypes. So we probably went through like 5 rounds before we got to something that was pretty similar to what we have now. We've since kind of continued to improve and all that. But it took about 5 years to get to something that really was, you know, the viable product. So.
Right. Yeah. You really gotta stay at it. And it's a continual improvement is important, but that's interesting that you had to go through that, that many revs, not surprising, but, Where did the name Mugsy Jeans come from?
So Mugsy is actually my dad's like nickname for my mom. It's like his pet name for her. And it doesn't really make sense because it has like a bit of like a gangster connotation, or like, there are a lot of like pit bulls out there. that her name's Mugsy, which is nothing like my mom in either way, but it's just her, like, their name, my dad's name for her when they're being goofy. And I heard him kind of calling her one day, and when I was brainstorming the idea, and I was like, Mugsy, I like the ring of that. It just, like, has like a, you know, just short, sweet, and to the point. And started telling my friends and, like, my my guy cousins about it, and they're all like, yeah, that's a cool name. So yeah, that's where Mugsy comes from, believe it or not.
I noticed you picked up that you have that domain name as well, just Mugsy.com. Is that how you probably had to pay up for that one, huh?
Yeah, that was a big one. That's one thing I never realized. When I thought of the name, I looked it up, and at the time it was like a few grand. And at that time, that like was way more money than I could have imagined. But I didn't realize that the bigger you get, you know, like that, like Mugsy doing better just kept driving the cost of Mugsy.com up. So there's never going to be a good time to buy it. So eventually, I think it was about a little over a year ago, we decided to bite the bullet and just get the name once and for all. But we started as MugsyJeans.com, fully written out. But eventually, we know we're going to kind of consolidate into Mugsy.com. Yeah, it was a big like kind of purchase and decision for us, for sure.
Right. Yeah, cool. In terms of your sales channels, then, I mean, obviously a lot of it is direct, but are you also working through any kind of traditional bricks and mortar retailers, all going through your website? Or I guess I also saw it available through some of Facebook's new shopping apps. So right. I'm just interested in your different sales channels.
Yeah, I'd say mostly online through our own website. Still, we started kind of dipping our toes into brick and mortar spaces of our own. And we started that last fall with a pop-up on Michigan Avenue. And then COVID hit, and a lot went down, obviously, but we weren't able to renew the lease. We decided to not, but we still wanted to experiment in this environment. And we were lucky enough to find a landlord that would work with us with some really favorable terms, like percentage of sales, rent to start, at least. It was just a few months to get us off the ground, and a short-term lease to really test the waters. So given their awesome flexibility, we were confident in like pushing the button and doing it. So we launched our first real store in Armitage in Lincoln Park just on August 1st. So just a little over a month or so. And it's been going well. So it's cool to see, because it's such a weird time, as I'm sure everyone knows, but especially for like brick and mortar retail. But we still thought it was an experiment worth, you know, going after.
Yeah, that's interesting to see how you're responding. I guess in every market there's opportunities there, and you want to, you know, continue with the momentum that you've built so far, and then try to make a go of it in this environment. Obviously, is the challenge that everybody's really facing. So
yeah, quite a challenge too.
I'd say so. So you have a standalone store at this point, then?
That's right.
That just started. And then how long is that? You said that was a shorter term commitment, though, for you.
Yeah, we were able to sign on for a year. And, you know, then we'll obviously kind of reevaluate, and we'll have a lot of data by then. So that was really helpful. And a few months of that, like I said, were percentage of sales. So that helps us kind of just make sure that our risk is pretty kind of mitigated.
Right. No, that's great. So you're able to take advantage of some of the displacement that's happening in the market.
Yep.
So that's great. What, So from a promotions perspective, I mean, obviously that's a big thing in retail. I noticed on your website you offer some like bundles that look like there's some compelling things. How do you manage promotions in your business?
Yeah, promotions is really tough. And our team, we probably have this debate daily at this point, but it's a very fine line of kind of incentivizing customers to purchase, and especially new customers, but then also diluting your brand. So I'm super conscious of not being too salesy to the point where it's, you know, expected, and then that becomes your, you know, kind of the expectation for year round is, you know, no one will come into the store unless you have like a 30% off sign in front kind of thing. You need to avoid that. But at the same time, you need to incentivize people to jump on and try a new product, especially for a new brand that they've never heard of. So it's something we think about a lot and we're very careful with. We'll obviously do a few big promotions a year, but generally we try to be very strategic with them. And bundling is something we just rolled out that we're really excited about. And that was almost more consumer driven. A lot of our customers had reached out asking, hey, I got the jeans, what else can I wear with them? You know, now my style, I look good from the waist down, but I need help with the, you know, the waist up. And bundles is a perfect opportunity to say, okay, well, we can make something that's more like an outfit or complete your wardrobe and give you a bigger incentive because, you know, the sales price is higher. So yeah, that's something we're testing, and I think it'll be pretty promising.
Yeah. I did notice you have quite a few different product categories as well. So when you started, I assume you were kind of dedicated to the jeans piece, and then you've been building it out beyond that, or what's been the thinking there? And then as you look at other product categories as well, I noticed like, well, obviously you're focused on menswear at this point. Is have you thought about going broader than that as well?
Yeah, so when we started, it was three jeans, that was it. So we didn't even have categories. We only had three products, which is pretty wild to think. But from there, it got to the point where people were reaching out to us saying, hey, I love the jeans. I'd love it if I could get them in like a chino short or a chino pant. And so a lot of the growth for our product line came just from our customers emailing us and their requests. So it was pretty organic in that sense, which made it a lot easier for us to transition. But I always think of the jeans will always be our bread and butter, and they're kind of the bullseye, and all the other product categories we offer will just kind of like expand from there. So yeah, the jeans will always be our main thing. It's what we're kind of hang our hat on. And from there, we're just offering, you know, other products that kind of have that same vibe and work within like our branding, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. Where, any thought about getting into women's wear, or are you going to keep it a men's brand?
Yeah, that's another question we get a lot. For now, we're sticking to the men's. That's what we know, and that's what we're good at. I think we'll definitely expand into women's at some point, but I think we have a lot farther to go in the men's space first. And to go into the women's space, I mean, it'll be a big investment, and we want to make sure we've kind of, you know, left our mark in the men's world, and then, you know, have the time and energy to put towards that investment of kind of expanding into a whole new category. So,
right, yeah,
cool. One day for sure.
Sure, that would be a game changer, but also it's in many ways probably a different. I mean, it's the same business, but when you get into just the number of inventory items and how, you know, it gets complicated too, right? And I'm sure it already does in terms of managing inventory with what you have. Yeah, kind of, can you talk to me a little bit about that? How do you, first, where's your manufacturing and how do you, is it overseas and then you bring it in or?
Yep, yeah, we manufacture overseas. That was kind of one of the bigger failures I had early on, was trying to make denim in the States. And it just seems like denim has become very niche in the States. You know, it's like kind of more of a selvage, raw denim, super high quality. But beyond that, it's pretty much non-existent here, especially at a price point that we're coming in at. So that was a big mistake, because I kind of forced American made in the early days, and the product just really faltered because of it. So we've since gone abroad. We have a couple factories in Asia, and then a factory in Egypt as well. And so a combo of those is where we make the bulk of our stuff. And then we do still make some stuff in the States, but it tends to be less denim focused, because it just seems like the expertise on denim is really outsourced nowadays or overseas.
And then as far as you're bringing the product over in containers then?
Yep.
Yeah. And then you bring that all to Chicago and manage it out of you know, you have a inventory here, or do you is it centralized, or do you have it spread out?
Yeah, we have a third party logistics partner we work with called Symbia, and they're located about an hour out west of the city of Chicago. So we warehouse everything there, and they handle all of our online orders. And they've been a great partner. So it's been really seamless, kind of working with them and integrating them with our website and making sure that all the orders go out and have minimal issues. So, which is obviously super important for an e-commerce brand. So it's been a really cool partnership for sure.
That's great. That's worked out well for you. How did you find them?
Oh my gosh. I've been working with them for years now. I don't remember how we found them at first. But at some point, you know, we were doing it all ourselves. We were doing all the shipping and fulfillment in our space. We had this little 1,000 square foot space on Fulton Market. So it was crammed to the brim with just jeans everywhere, and it was just chaos. And it quickly got to the point where we couldn't handle it anymore. So started the process of looking for a good partner. We had a few options in the city or within the greater Chicagoland area. But Symbia was our ultimate choice, and it's been a great partnership ever since.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. How about your, from a manufacturing perspective, you talk to us a little bit about how you found your partners for the manufacturing spots.
Yeah, so back when I was in New York, I brainstorming the idea, I went to a trade show just to kind of explore what was out there and see if any factories would work with me. And walked by this one booth, and there was this really cool French Canadian guy, and him and I kind of hit it off. And at the time, Mugsy was nothing, but another big issue in, or I wouldn't say issue, but a hurdle in the apparel industry is minimum order quantities. And they often tend to be in the thousands, especially abroad. Or, you know, for non-specialty items. So we were nowhere near, you know, prepared to place orders that size. But like I said, I started with a smaller factory in the States. It ended up not working. And then eventually we got to the point where we were big enough. And I had still been keeping in touch with my friend from the New York Trade Show. Gave him a call one day, and we started working together. And we've been working together now for like 3 or 4 years. So that's another great partnership to me. We've been able to just continue to improve our jeans and crank out really quality products. It's been cool.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. So from a capital perspective, yeah, I mean, you're in a position where you have to pay for your inventory probably well in advance of collecting any money, right, from your customers. How have you, do you have outside investors, or have you been bootstrapping it, or how have you managed that part of the business?
Yeah, we're bootstrapped. So self-funded and bootstrapped at first, and we've been able to do it a lot with debt financing and just kind of really controlling and having smart growth over the last few years, which is, you know, been a really interesting process, but has a lot of headaches, as you can imagine, just really being that tight with cash. But ultimately, it was the right decision for us, and yeah, I wouldn't change anything about it. So yeah, we've been lucky in that we've been able to grow fast and have high growth without needing, you know, a huge equity investor to come in and kind of take over.
Yeah, you want to put that off as long as you can, right? I mean,
exactly.
I guess it's always a balance, but the longer you can do it on your own, probably the better off you'll be. So
definitely.
What about, I know some interesting copy you have on your website with little, you know, descriptions of the items and stuff. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of curation that goes into that. Are you, you have a sizable team, or you're doing, you know, that kind of work yourself as well?
Well, I feel like I still have my hands on a little bit of everything, but we have a copywriter that we work with, and I mean, back in the day, it was definitely me writing everything, and the vibe was very similar. It just definitely didn't sound as good. Not my area of expertise by any means, but we've since started working with a copywriter, and he's been able to go through the whole website and even our emails and just freshen them up with, you know, lively copy and text. I mean, cause to me, it was always important that we make the brand feel relatable. Like I always tell when we have a new member join the team, like when we interact with people, we want them to feel like they're just hanging out with their buddy, like their close friend. We don't want it to seem like, you know, hello, how are you today? And, you know, best regards, you know, the Muggsy team. It's like, hey, what's going on? You know, what, how can we help you? Perfect. We'll get you these awesome jeans. Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon. And just, you know, just more nonchalant and like a good buddy. So we try to do that all throughout the website and really with everything we do.
Yeah. I kind of got that vibe. I mean, I'm not not a customer yet, but just in the look and the feel, it seems like a similar touch to like a Warby Parker type thing that you have with glasses. I've been through that experience a few times, and yeah, they seem to do a good job and a similar thing in terms of trying to, well, I guess they have more of a retail presence a little bit now with a number of stores, but they, you know, with that, it's a challenge, right? Because like with jean sizing, you know, it's not the standards, I guess. Yeah. How do you manage that part of it? Because in some ways it is similar to eyeglasses where you don't ever know what will fit, right? I'm sure you have to have a high return rate, and you know, can you talk a little bit about that and how you manage those pieces?
Yeah, that was definitely one of those things that you never think about when you're going into like a new business. When I was like, I'm going to create a jeans company, you never think about, oh my God, all the SKUs and the different sizes. You know, when we have one pair of style of jeans, we have 39 different sizes in that one style. So, I mean, you quickly run into a whole bunch of issues about, you know, the ratio of the sizes and how they make up, you know, your orders, and you know, being size broken, meaning you have a lot of inventory in certain sizes and, you know, you're depleted in others, and balancing that is a huge and constant battle. But like I said, those Excel skills I had helped a lot, and we've since been able to get some programs to help us, you know, kind of manage that better. But yeah, SKUs are tough. That's a really tough one. I mean, I almost envy the Warbys of the world where they can have 100 different glasses, but that's only 100 SKUs. Where for me, that would be like two or three styles of jeans. And at this point, you probably have upwards of 100 different styles overall, which would mean thousands of SKUs. And it's a huge, huge part of the business, managing all that.
Right. Yeah, no, I take my hat off to you. Had a little experience in working through that, and just audits of, there was a shoe company I did some work on way back in the day. And yeah, you pick up a lot about retail, doing the audits on that and looking at some of those. I guess you guys are still, you've been in the business for what, 5 years now? So sure. Probably haven't, given the growth in your business, you probably don't have a lot of excess or obsolete inventory, but you know, over time that can creep in as well, and can certainly be a challenge. But you know, when things are growing fast, so it's more keeping the stuff in stock and turning it, I guess, is probably the bigger challenge. But
yeah, absolutely, it's definitely something we've had to tackle more in the last year as our, you know, products have grown, like our you know, the variety of different products that you were talking about earlier. You know, now we do swim and underwear and socks, whereas even just like a little over a year ago, we pretty much had just jeans and chinos. So yeah, it's something new every day. But yeah, one thing that's been surprising is return rates are actually quite manageable because of how stretchy the clothes are themselves. And then we do a lot to just offer that free at-home try-on experience. You know, we'll do like 60 days return policy, no questions asked, we pay for shipping both ways. And I think to the customer, that instills a lot of confidence in them that, hey, you know, these guys have faith in their product. Because at the end of the day, we stand behind our product. We know how amazing and like life-altering is the words that we use in our marketing, but we know how the experience will be. And we're so confident in that experience that we'll pretty much do whatever it takes and take on all the risk just for you to try it on. And when I think the customers feel that confidence, and it comes through in the products, so it helps.
Nice. So we talked a little bit about Ian Happ and your relationship with him. Are there other influencers out there that you're working with specifically, or you're kind of starting with that relationship and seeing where it takes you?
Yeah, Ian was a cool one because Ian just came into our store one day and just said, "Hey, I heard about your jeans from a buddy and just wanted to try them out." And next thing you know, he loved them, and they're perfect for athletes because they have such high stretch, and those guys have crazy proportions, especially with those thunder thighs. So it's almost impossible for a lot of those guys to find clothes off the rack. And he was able to kind of walk out in Muggsies and, you know, looking and feeling great. So that was a really, like, kind of, again, a natural, just organic partnership that came up, and it was a no-brainer for us. That was probably our real first dive into the influencer world. I've always been really kind of scared of it because, you know, finding a partner to represent your brand, an outside party, it's a huge, you know, it's a huge undertaking, and, like, it's a lot of responsibility in their hands. You don't want to, you know, choose someone that, you know, could be bad. I mean, you just have to really take your time and choose the right people, and Ian's been great. So it's been a cool experiment so far, and we'll definitely kind of dive into it more. But yeah, Ian's the man, so he's rocking the jeans well.
That's awesome. Yeah. Then yes, just one last thing I'd like to touch on is just with COVID 19 and how that, you know, the innovation that has required by your business, you know, what are some of the biggest challenges that you've had to face with that were kind of unforeseen, and how are you coming out of that at this point?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it's obviously impacted every facet of the business, and we pretty much had to hit the drawing board on everything. But I think the bigger one is, you know, the product at the end of the day hasn't changed much. And we make jeans, which, given how much everyone's staying in, is maybe a little less in demand, but at the same time, people aren't going to the office as much. And, you know, still a lot of our customers tend to wear more, you know, business, you know, formal, like, you know, whether it's suits, khaki, slacks, that kind of thing. So just figuring out how we can market our products, which we know guys are still going to wear because they're jeans. It's a staple of most guys' wardrobe at this point. But just changing the narrative about how they live and how Muggsies can fit into their lives, if that makes sense. You know, maybe before it was like, hey, you know, wear these to work on, you know, casual Friday, and then take them out and keep them on when you go to date night that night. And then now it's like, well, no one's going to the office and no one's going on date night, but we're still going out and, like, you know, going to the grocery store, like, you know, the having barbecues and stuff. So how can we change our marketing and the narrative to kind of fit this total flip in people's lives? That's been probably the bigger thing for us. But luckily, we didn't have to do, like, a major shift in, like, the products we offer, any of that kind of stuff.
I saw you added some masks, but that was about it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, the masks were cool too. And really, we used those more as a promotional tool. And we weren't trying, we're still not trying to make money off the masks. It's more, you know, we could make them and offer them to our customers and kind of help curb the spread. And people really took to them. And we actually, it's funny, it wasn't a product we aimed to make. It's our factory. And again, this goes back to having good partners. Our factory reached out to us and said, hey, like, we're making these masks. I sent you a few, try them out. Our team loved them. We're like, sure, let's buy a few thousand, see if people like them. And then next thing you know, people are, like, you know, all over them. We have, that's probably our, like, best reviewed product on the website. People are really just loving them. And we've since ordered several thousand more. And now we're thinking, like, expanding that. So just, it's funny how things work out. And you just never know what's going to happen in this world. But it's all fun, you know.
That's great. Yeah. So what does the future look like for Muggsy? What are the next few years? You know, where do you see it going?
Yeah, I think just keep on cruising ahead. You know, we had that really cool Inc. the number 69 on the Inc. 5000 list. That was a really cool accomplishment for us this year, and we just want to keep that growth going and keep kicking ass. So we have a lot of guys' legs to get on with our jeans, and there's a lot of people out there that still haven't heard of us. So it's still about just improving the product and getting them on as many guys as possible. So full steam ahead.
Nice. Sounds good. Yeah. Well, if people want to learn more, obviously Muggsy.com or MuggsyJeans.com is a good place to start. Where else should they look for you?
Here in Chicago, which I'm assuming most of you are, check us out on Armitage and Sheffield about in Lincoln Park, right under the Brown Line stop, the Armitage Brown Line stop. Otherwise, check us out at Muggsy.com. Like I said, we have free shipping and returns, so zero risk to try them on, and your legs will thank you. So,
very good. Well, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. And let's stay in touch.
All right. Thanks for having me, Drew. Appreciate it.
Take care, though.
Yeah.
Cheers.